You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Cleveland, this is for you.
Joining Evan and I today from Bleach Report is friend of the program, Greg Schwartz. Greg, what's up, buddy? How are you surviving and navigating this continued weird existence we're living in right now?
You know, I'm really starting to miss basketball. I think the first week or two, it wasn't too bad. And now, like, when you're looking at the schedule and it's like, oh, the playoffs should be starting soon. And, you know, even if the Cavs aren't in it, I mean, that's the best time of the year for basketball fans. Even if you have no rooting interest, just people actually playing defense, the intensity, the crowds. I mean, everything that's so great about playoff basketball. So I think that's really what's starting to hit me now is, wow, we're really not going to see that this year.
Yeah, it's a little weird. Evan and I have been like, we're obviously in the throes of trying to do podcasts during this. You know, we're down to the three episodes a week right now, and we'll see when and if we kind of get basketball back. But yeah, it's starting to feel weird without it. Evan, are you like you and I both are in this boat where like sometimes we're just like both tired from our day jobs and like honestly like first world problems and not wanting like covering games from home instead of going to the arena. But I got to tell you, like if it was a Wednesday 8 p.m. game or something like that, I would be like 100% just like making sure I was down there because I extremely just miss that environment. Are you in that same boat as we before we kind of move on to talk about something that isn't COVID-19 related?
I'm in the same boat as Greg, where I miss it. For those who are dedicated listeners, I did start, and if you saw my tweet today, I did start listening to Return of the King, not the Tolkien version, the Windhorse and McMenamin version, and it just kind of made me nostalgic for that. But, you know, maybe not on a Wednesday night, but if it was a weekend game, Chris, I think you and I would both be there. But if this was just like a regular normal routine or at this point, like I miss the atmosphere and I miss the environment of Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse or Romo Fi Ho or whatever you want to call it. That was just me trying to be hip. Yeah, I miss that for sure. But I don't know. Maybe not a Wednesday night game.
Yeah, I would take any basketball right now. I would take like the worst version of like a Cavs game you could come up with right now. I would watch it. I cannot wait for the Michael Jordan documentary starting on Sunday. I am absolutely juiced for that. I love that they're doing a version that is without swear words on ESPN2, and then you get like the adult version on ESPN. I think that's just like hilarious, but I cannot wait to watch that. Some of the little bits we've already seen, like I don't know if you guys saw about like Michael Jordan like gambling with arena workers on like the in-game entertainment results like and he would like know the results and then bet money and like swindle people out of money. It's just like like kind of a dick move, but just like an incredible just
he didn't
a little
have a problem.
No problems for Michael Jordan whatsoever. But it's just one of those things that I was very, very young for those. And the team we're going to talk about today, I was extremely young for, but I was even younger for that. So I'm very excited to get into that. But the team we're going to talk about today is, I think, one of the all-time great Cavs teams. It's the 08-09 Cavs. They obviously don't make the finals, but this is a team that was first in defense, was 13th in offense. They went 66 games, 66-16. This is year five for LeBron James. You have Joe Smith is on this team. You get Wally Szczerbiak. Ben Wallace is on this team. This is Delonte West. This is Mo Williams. This is, you know, you have JJ Hickson. Sasa Pavlovic is still around. You know, this is like a very, very, very good Cavs team. This is probably near the peak of, this is arguably, you could say, LeBron's best Cavs season. I'm sure we'll, at least in the first run, we'll talk about that. But this is an all-time Cavs. Yeah, this is an all-time, I think, good Cavs team. Finishes first in the East again, loses to Orlando in the playoffs where LeBron hit kind of, they just kind of get, you know, wrecked in that series for a lot of different reasons. But Greg,
steroids.
You said it, not me. But Greg, when we look, and this was a team, again, that was first in wins in the league, first in a bunch of different statistics, just a whole, like a real, like fourth in offensive rating and third in defensive rating. Like, this is an elite team on both ends of the floor, which certainly wasn't the case with some of LeBron teams we would see later in Cleveland. But Greg, as the resident like adult during this time, what do you remember from the 08-09 Cavs? Because Evan and I were teens who were, I still speak for myself, I was an idiot when I was 15, and I've had to go back and learn a lot more about this team. But what do you remember about this team?
Yeah, 08-09, that was a great year. I turned 21. I was in college at Akron. And, you know, obviously just right down the road, you know, from Cleveland. Well, you know, I had to mention where I went to college.
Yeah, but then, like, I forgot that both of you are Akron people, and at least you're not, like, BG or whatever people. So I'll take my wins.
So I just remember, you know, getting up to Quicken Loans Arena as much as we could, always looking at it for, you know, tickets up in Loudville, you know, as poor college kids, whenever we could afford them, getting as many games as possible. And I just remember, you know, watching basically every game with my roommates and just thinking, like, these guys don't lose. Like, some of the most incredible things that stand out to me is, yeah, they went 66-16, but people forget the last game of the season, they rested all their starters. They rested LeBron, they rested Mo Williams, Zydrunas Ilgauskas, Ben Wallace, they even rested J.J. Hickson. I mean, that's how bad it was. And they lost to the Philadelphia 76ers at home by like 1 point. And the 76ers, they weren't a great team, but they had Andre Iguodala, they had Lou Williams, they had a Thaddeus Young, they had some good players, and they lost them by like 1 point with their backups. Had they played starters that game, even one starter, they would have went 40-1 at home that season and tied an NBA record. And instead, they finished 39-2. I mean, they did not lose at home. It was unbelievable. And just the fact that, you know, they could have finished with 67 wins, which would have been a record for LeBron. At the time, 66 was a record for him. He tied that one time in Miami. But, I mean, just an unbelievable defensive team that, you know, they were good defensively in the past. I think the year before that they were 20th in offense, and then finally put it together. They figured, oh, maybe we should put some shooters around LeBron. And they did. They had a lot of guys that could shoot. They had a second all-star finally, and Mo Williams made the all-star team that year. Just a really fun team to watch. And just overall, probably LeBron's best individual season as well.
Before we go to Evan here, I just want to note that this is the first Mo Williams year to his age 26 season. Really, really just really good numbers kind of across the board from, you know, career high in points, a bunch of stuff like that before, you know, he gets close again with I think it looks like Charlotte, like when he was with Charlotte, the little time he was with Charlotte, and before he came back to Cleveland for the end of his career. The other thing about this season, and Greg, I think hinted at this correctly, this is an absurd team at home. Do you guys have, can I get a guess on what month you guys think they lost their first game at home in? Just give me a month.
I mean, I would say maybe like January.
Okay. Evan, what's your guess?
December.
Okay. They lost their first home game on February 8th.
Oh my God.
They were 23-0 at home, 39-10, and they lose to the Lakers at home in February of that season. They get to the first time in franchise history this season when, on March 2nd, where they're the first team ever to get in Cavs history to go 35 games over 500. When they beat the Kings in March, they clinched the Central Division title, their first division title since the 75-76 season, and they're only their second in franchise history. They tied a record on March 19th for committing just two turnovers in a game, which is pretty crazy considering just the volume of possessions as compared to, you know, kind of where things were. And we'll get to kind of how this ends, but like, I think, again, I think sort of like this, the 16-17 theme that we just talked about with Alex Cooper, like, I you guys tell me if I'm wrong here, but I wonder, I think this is a team that when you look back and you look at how it ended and you look at kind of what would come after this, I wonder if we just like forget about how good this team really was and how like special LeBron was this year and just how, you know, things could have things don't break right in a lot of ways. And I think the way it ends kind of does rob us of what would have even look, especially right now. I think we'd have magnified this particular finals at an even higher level, considering who it would have been matched up against and whatnot. But in all, like, I think this is just truly like an all-time Cavs team, and, you know, some flaws on the team, sure, but like overall, like a really, really, really good team.
Yeah, they're a really good team.
One of the things that worked really well was, I mean, everything was built so well around LeBron. You know, it kind of took him a couple of years to figure it out. And yeah, you didn't have a true, you know, second star. I mean, Mo Williams was an all-star, but he's not, you know, the quality of a Kyrie or an Anthony Davis or a teammate that LeBron's had then. But you kind of figured it out. Like, okay, you know, we put some shooters around. We don't need to have a guy that averages 10 assists, but, you know, to have a guy like Mo Williams and Delonte West that can pass and play make a little bit, that helped. West was a very good defender in the backcourt. You had a guy like Z that, you know, was starting to develop his range. He didn't have to clog up the paint the whole time. You had, you know, Anderson Varejao was starting to become a very good hustler, rebounder, screen setter. And then you had your shooters. You had Daniel Gibson, Wally Szczerbiak off the bench. It was kind of the year that, you know, the Cavs really figured out, okay, what works around LeBron. And then I think that really helped him maximize his individual game as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's just the best way to put it. Like, this is obviously going to be the best team in the Mike Brown era. And like you said, Chris, I think this team does get a little bit forgotten just in the fact that LeBron bolted for Miami soon after this. And, you know, he wins a title there, and a lot of people just start to bring up like that. It was like a joke for the longest time, especially in 07 when LeBron more or less dragged the Cavs to the finals to get swept by San Antonio, like people saying like, oh, well, LeBron had no help in Cleveland this entire time here. But like, no, this team was legitimately elite. And I was going through it while you were talking, asking us about the first home loss for the Cavs, which was, yeah, again, weird and crazy that it was in February. But Chris, do you know what the worst loss for this Cavs squad was?
Do I know when it was or who, like, so when it was?
Let's go with who it was against. It makes sense once you know who it is.
It's probably, well, you saying that, it makes me think it's probably Orlando.
Correct. It was a 29-point loss in April, so it was a game that probably didn't carry much weight.
Yeah. The Orlando thing ends up being really interesting. It's a series that I think, when I get a little more time here, I think it's actually something I'd really like to rewatch, just because I think it would get it'd be good. I just think from a historical perspective, I would kind of like to do it.
It's the first time I broke a remote over a sporting event. I hated the Orlando Magic for the longest time after this, and Dwight Howard to an extent as well.
Yeah, I get that. I think this is a series that, and you know,
Turkaloo.
Yeah, I don't think there is a Cavs fan in the world that has like positive feelings about Edo Turkoglu, frankly. You know, it's just like one of those facts that we just, you know, no one ever really is going to feel good about them.
Political, but if you side with the Turkish government, I think that's the only time you're a Edo Turkoglu fan at this point juncture in your life.
As we get out of here, guys, do you have any kind of random thing from the season that you want to just point out? We'll get into, I think, some of the LeBron stuff and then how it ends, but anything kind of random from the season that you kind of want to point out? Any Heap, any player, any stuff like that you're just like, okay, like I just want to like make sure I kind of mention that this really, really mattered.
Well, since Greg's on the show, it would be remiss of me not to ask a trivia question. Do you guys know the top three highest paid players in order of this Cavs team? Number one might surprise you.
Ben Wallace would be up there, I know.
Okay, Greg got one.
Yeah, Ben would have been, because it's not, I don't know what LeBron's making at this point, because I think I don't know if he's still on the rookie deal or on the end of the rookie deal. Or this is like his first really cheap extension. I think this would be the first cheap extension, but he still might be top three.
LeBron was not the highest paid player on his own team. I don't think until Miami.
Yeah, something like that.
Because even like his last year in Cleveland, Shaq was the highest paid player.
Yeah, I think that's right. Is Mo Williams in that three?
He is not. Mo Williams is fifth on the list at $8.3 million.
Yeah, just give us the three, Evan.
It would have been Ben Wallace. LeBron was top three, though, right?
Yeah, it was Ben Wallace at number one at $14.5 million. LeBron at number two. Zerbiak. Yeah, Zerbiak was three at $13.8 million if you round up. which is absurd.
Okay.
So here's the Zerbiak season that year. It's 08-09. This is actually the last year of his career, which I did not know. There's been a reoccurring theme on this where like a lot of random guys who had like good NBA careers come to the Cavs and then they just like their careers are over after that. We just were talking about that in 17. It's like guys come in and it's like that happened with Dunleavy, but he goes to Atlanta, obviously. Then you have like Zerbiak, you have Mo Williams.
On the year before.
Yeah, Sean Marion, Mike Miller, a whole bunch of guys like that. But here's Zerbiak's season this year. Age 31, he's in Cleveland for a year and a half with the Cavs in the two seasons, 21 minutes a game, shot 41.8% from the field, and no other stop did he shoot worse than 44% from the field, 7.3 points, which is about half of his career average. And if you just in 3-point attempts shoots 40% on three, which is about to his career average. But while he's in like just overall shot 41%, as I noted. So like and that he was a 48% shooter for his career. This is a guy that like I think it's one of those guys that I think like in a vacuum like fit, the idea of him fits really well in LeBron, and then it's just like never worked. And it's one of those like kind of another one of those kind of weird things. And what ifs? It's just like if you have a Wally Zerbiak that's like 10% better, like sort of closer to what he was towards the end of the Minnesota run or stuff like that. Like you wonder if, you know, he can give you at least a little bit more this season and kind of help you as things go. Okay. We're going to take a quick break, come back and talk about the LeBron James season that he had this year, his age 24 season right after this on Locked On Cavs. All right, we are back here. Greg Schwartz is with Evan and I today. We're talking about the 08-09 Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm going to run you through, guys, what LeBron James did this season because it is quite ridiculous. So 28.4 points per game, 78% from the line, 7.2 assists, 7.6 boards per game, 1.1 blocks, 1.7 steals, shot 53% on two-pointers, 34% on three-pointers, shot 48% from the 0.9% from the field overall, played in 81 games, 37 minutes a night. If you just look at some of the advanced numbers here, in terms of his value over replacement, this is the 08-09. So he's at 11.8 VORP. That is a career high above 1.5 above his next best value of replacement season. It's way above that Miami season, the 2012-13 one, where he shoots like 65, almost 65% from the field in those last 2 years. And it's way above what he was in terms of that. It's just all time. His PR is a career high. There's just every like thing. You look at this, it makes you wonder if this is the best LeBron season in a row was. I don't think this is LeBron. I don't feel comfortable saying that 24 LeBron was the peak of LeBron in terms of that what he could do on the biggest stage. But I think that is going to go down as Miami LeBron. But I think there's an argument to me that this is the best LeBron regular season we've ever seen. No?
In Cleveland, yeah, it's up there. That's why I said no, it's not, because no, those Miami years were insane. So, but I'll let Greg have the floor first, let him elaborate on it while I kind of just stew over that and see if there's a better LeBron year I can pull out on you real quick.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you just speak from a purely athletic standpoint, 24-year-old LeBron was one of the best athletes in the NBA we've ever seen. You mentioned kind of some of the advanced stats there. I mean, the majority of the advanced stats that season when he was 24 in 08-09, that was the best of his career. Like you said, the PER was the best. The value over replacement player was the best. 20.3 win shares that year, the best of his career. When you see a player efficiency rating in the 30s, I mean, you're talking about like an all-time elite level. That player efficiency rating for LeBron, 31.7, that ranks as the fourth highest individual player efficiency rating season of all time. Wilt Chamberlain is 1 and 2. Michael Jordan is 3. LeBron is 4. I mean, that's just one of the best ratings we've ever seen. And Giannis this season is up to 7th. And I mean, you look at the kind of numbers he's put up. He didn't even touch LeBron that year. You look at Steph Curry when he was the unanimous MVP, not even as high as he was, all those great all-time Jordan seasons. Only one of them barely tops LeBron, 31.71 to 31.67, if you break it down. So if you're looking for, you know, his best season in terms of all the advanced numbers, 08-09 was the best LeBron, certainly in that aspect, that we've ever seen.
Yeah, no, now that I'm breaking it down, I can't be a smart ass and just pull out a season other than the 12-13 season with Miami, where LeBron was just inhuman in terms of just across the board just being a god. But no, that 08-09 LeBron season was just incredible to watch, and just like definitely, you know, a little frustrating because of how the season ended against Orlando, because I think if the Cavs are able to play the Lakers in the NBA Finals that year, I don't know if the Cavs could win. I don't want to make that sure bet because the Lakers were pretty damn good that year too. But it would have been a lot more entertaining of a series that than Magic Lakers. I can definitely say that, just because you have LeBron clearly at his peak at 24 years old, and then you had a very fun Lakers team that was obviously led by Kobe Bryant. You know, that's just one end a lot of schoolyard debates now that you really start expounding upon it a lot too.
LeBron Kobe would have just been them not playing against each other in the finals, I think, is an all time thing that unfortunately we're never going to get to see. And like, it being this year would have been incredible. You know, again, these are the top number one seeds in both conferences. This is Kobe and Powell kind of in a groove. This is like the young LeBron against a Kobe who's kind of cementing himself on his own before the fall off in his career comes. And it would have just, again, like, I think this is just something that would have been an all-time finals. And yeah, like, it's Orlando, good for Orlando. Like, I don't want to besmirch Orlando fans who like got a lot of joy out of that. Like, I don't want to do that to those people, but it's like LeBron and Kobe would have just been incredible. And especially when you look at like the playoffs, like, it's sort of crazy that, and I did not know this until I was doing research for this podcast, but the Cavs went 8-0 in the first two rounds. They were just kind of beat Atlanta, just throttles in that Atlanta
team. Swept Atlanta, swept Detroit.
Yeah, swept Atlanta, swept Detroit, and then they get to Orlando, and, you know, like, you're thinking, Greg, you tell me if I'm wrong here, but I feel like the consensus would have been, okay, like, you're not playing Boston. You know, it's a little easier to kind of fight back against this group if you're not playing Boston. And, you know, Dwight's obviously very good, and Dwight will go on to be like an MVP contender and stuff like that in a couple of years. But, you know, like, it's no shade. It's just like, it's Orlando, and you're thinking, okay, like, you wonder if the Cavs, like, it's a one seed. It's just, you feel good about everything. And yet, and we'll get to the numbers LeBron put up in the series, but it's just like, they couldn't, it wasn't enough. And that's like a real bummer, all things considering.
No, I can tell you that year, the Celtics were the team you were worried about. They had just knocked you out of the playoffs the year before. They had just won the finals the year before. They were neck and neck record-wise with Cleveland. They finished 62-20 that year. I mean, they were only four games behind Cleveland in the East. And you think, wow, I mean, Cleveland won 66 games, you know, a franchise record. And it's not like they ran away with the East. It's not like they had a 10-game lead. They were only up by four. On the Celtics. So the whole time everybody's thinking, okay, we're going to get an Eastern Conference Finals that comes down to Cleveland and Boston. And, you know, for Orlando to actually beat them and make it there, I think that was surprising. And I don't want to say that, you know, that they overlooked Orlando, because obviously they had a really bad loss to them, like you mentioned. But, you know, the whole year it was kind of Cleveland-Boston. It was, you know, it was Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce that, yeah, they were still really good, but they were in their 30s, and, you know, you kind of wondered how long they were going to hang on. And then you had a Cleveland team that, you know, was obviously very much on the rise, and, you know, it was Orlando kind of snuck up on them.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. They lost the season series in the regular season to Orlando, only winning one of them, 97-93 in Cleveland in March. But yeah, maybe like Greg said, like, I think the primary focus was finally getting past Boston, because that was a monkey on LeBron's back for the longest time that even went with him when he was in Miami as well. And it just kind of stinks, because the following season, the Cavs match up with Boston in the 2010 playoffs and they lose 4-2. And we all know what happens after that. And
it's just, it definitely stinks because I feel like that Cavs team could have taken Boston to task, and I think they kind of looked past Orlando, and I think maybe Orlando is just a team that, the way it was constructed, is a team that Cleveland struggled with, and since they weren't really as prepared for them as they were Boston, maybe that just, having them sneak up on them a little bit was a bit of a gut punch, and just kind of, steroids aside, knocked the Cavs off their rocker a little bit, and, you know, just kind of ruined what could have been an awesome season.
Let me ask you guys a hypothetical here as we wrap up segment number two. Let's say take the 16-17 Cavs and the 08-09 Cavs and you play them in a series against each other seven times. Who comes out on top?
16-17 Cavs because Tyronn Lue's coaching.
Greg, where are you at?
Yeah, I mean, even with 66 wins, I mean, I think the 16-17 Cavs are probably the best Cavs team of all time. I don't think we can debate that. I know they didn't win the title. I know they didn't have the best regular season record, but I don't know if it's because of the coach. I don't know if I'm going to go that far, but if they play
each
other...
Ty's a much better coach than Mike. All respect to Mike Brown. Ty's a much better coach.
I completely agree with that, but you're not asking him to, you know, set a real high bar there either. That maybe that Cavs team from 08-09 wins one game in that series, but clearly the 16-17 was better.
Okay, I agree. I think I agree.
LeBron learned how to win a title and what it took to win a title in Miami, so I think maybe a more mature season LeBron would push that 16-17 Cavs past his younger self.
And he had far more help around him in 16-17.
Yeah.
a lot more help. You're comparing Kyrie to Mo Williams. You're comparing Kevin Love to the Jonas Ogalskis. I mean, he had good players around him in 08-09, but you can't make the same roster comparison in 16-17.
Yeah, I think the only thing that's – I think – the 16-17 team wins, I think they just would light, they would just like, even though that defense is very good, I think basketball is changing. It would very much change by the time we get to 16-17. And I do just think that team with the offensive firepower probably does just kind of light up the 08-09 team. And just, again, like Kyrie is just at his peak at that time. He's a much, much better player than Mo Williams. Kevin Love is, you know, would be better than anyone on the 08-09 team. Like, I love Delonte and stuff, but like, he's not going to, you know, kind of end up kind of solving some of the issues they're going to have. And I think the Cavs just would have done a lot of stuff to really exploit, you know, Ben Wallace at that time. Like, it's sort of crazy that Ben Wallace, like, you know, highest paid player on the team and stuff like that. But this is like post Ben Wallace at his peak. Like, this isn't Ben Wallace. Mm-hmm. This is Ben Wallace. He gets a really big contract from Chicago, is there for a couple of years, but he's not at his peak anymore. And he's still contributing, but he's just not the same kind of guy that he was, you know, at his time, and ends up being traded in the Shaq trade, you know, later on. So it's one of those kind of weird things to kind of think about.
You know, but yeah, really, I think, bothered me about Ben Wallace that year,
what, that he was not actually 6'9"?
He never picked the fro out.
Oh, yeah.
He was cornrows that whole year. He did not go with the fro. And you kind of, you know, you picture Ben Wallace, you picture him defensive player of the year, Detroit Pistons, you know, he's probably 6'6", but he'd get that fro picked out. And he was like, all of a sudden he was 7 foot. He never did that. There was like maybe two times. And I don't know. It was like iconic for him. I wanted to see that. And he never did that. And I was convinced that's why he was so terrible then, was his hair.
Yeah. That's
my pictures now, and yeah, it's on my cornrows. What a shame. What a missed, what an all hair team opportunity between him and Andy. Just those two alone.
Yeah, iconic hair team. Then you throw in LeBron's. You know, LeBron's not even going bald yet, so it's truly what you want. Okay, one last break here, and we're going to come back with more Locked On Cavs. Talk about how this season ended, unfortunately, and we'll be right back. All right, we are back here on Locked On Cavs with Greg Schwartz from Bleacher Report talking about the 08-09 Cavs. I just want to point out that so much time has gone by since this season that Courtney Lee was a rookie that year. Courtney Lee is now 34 years old. shows you how much time it, and it's just like has been around as long, I feel like, as long as I've been very much paying attention to basketball. This season ends with the Orlando Magic beating the Cavs. To run through that series, Orlando wins game one, 107-106. Cavs win game two, 96-95. LeBron has 35 in game two. Four had 49 in game one. Then you get to game three. Orlando wins 99-89 in Orlando. LeBron has 41-9 in this game. And the next one in OT, the Magic take a 3-1 series lead with a win. LeBron has 44-12 boards, had 7 assists as well. But again, Orlando wins in overtime. And then you continue on here. This is just, you get to a point where Orlando, the Cavs win a game five and then are beaten in game six, lose the series 4-2. LeBron has an absurd series. Here's his averages for this one. It's just, this is unreal when I really look at this. LeBron James, 38.5 points per game. Okay. Had a 38 usage rate. Effect had a true shooting percentage just under 60%. Is averaging 8 assists a game, averaging 8.3 rebounds per game. Is basically doing everything for the Cavs. The only knock on his thing the whole series is that he only shot 29% on 3-point attempts. Took 37 over 6 games, so a little over 6 a game there. Was not effective in that sense, but was otherwise dominant in just about everything else. Greg, we'll start with you. What do you remember from this series and kind of just how it unfolds, how it ends and all that?
Oh my, well, we got to talk about the end of game two.
One of my favorite moments in history.
Maybe the best LeBron game winner of all time.
I would say yes. Actually working on a project right now that's kind of reviewing LeBron game winners in the playoffs. And, you know, yeah, obviously he's had some amazing ones. You look at, you know, a couple against Washington in 2006, his last year in Cleveland, one against the Raptors, one against the Pacers. He had a game winner against the Pacers when he was with Miami, Detroit. There's, you know, you go up and down the list, but in terms of what that shot meant, you know, you got punched in the mouth in game one. You were at home. You're the number one seed in the East. You were thankful that you didn't have to play Boston, and Orlando walks in and you're like, well, you know, this, it's not going to be easy, but you know, our biggest opponent's already been knocked out. And then you get beat in game one at home. And I think it just sent a shockwave because it's like, wait a minute, we were 8-0. We swept the first two rounds easily. And now we lost. And then you come down to the end of game two, you're down by 2. It's not even like, okay, let's try to tie this. Let's get it to overtime. It's like, you know, we need to win. We cannot go down back to Orlando down 0-2. And I remember, you know, sitting in my college house with my roommates, like, you know, watching this game and thinking, and nobody is saying a word. Like, it was just like, this can't happen. We can't lose because just the momentum of the season and everything that was going. And then, you know, LeBron, they run, I think Mo Williams was the inbounder. LeBron starts on the right side, Turkoglu guarding him. He kind of gives him a bump, and then he runs out the 3-point line, catches it, and Turkoglu actually bumps him in the leg too. So I mean, easily he could have fallen down and gotten a foul call, and just that shot, and then him running back and kind of being embraced by Sasha Pavlovich and Anderson Varejao. I mean, that to me is the most iconic LeBron shot that I think I can remember.
No, it definitely was, and it's one of my. Well, obviously, the 16 titles being the favorite, but like that shot was absolutely crazy because I was convinced that I'm like, the Cavs are kind of dead in the water here. And like Chris and I have kind of alluded to, I was a sophomore in high school, and this so obviously my basketball knowledge isn't as refined as it is now. I'm still an idiot. Let's just be frank with everyone listening. But no, like I remember the call. It was Rashard Lewis playing off the ball, then Williams gets to LeBron for 3 for the win, and then like it felt like a moment in time where everything was just playing out in slow motion, and it went in, and I'm like, oh, this guy's Superman. He's unbelievable. And turns out the other Superman was the one who was unbelievable. But just for a moment in time, I felt like the Cavs were back in this, and it was just a cool moment. And yeah, no, one of my favorite moments in Cavs history.
I'm gonna play the clip here now from that just so people can kind of remember how that sounded. So here's just the game winner that LeBron hits in this game, just so you can remember how that sounds.
Mo Williams will throw in. Rashard Lewis playing off the ball. Lewis gets it to LeBron for three for the win. Yes! LeBron James at the buzzer as the Cavaliers have pulled it out to tie the series. And what a miraculous shot by James!
Yeah, an unbelievable LeBron James shot there. And when I just think about this, it's like, I think when I look back, it's like when I remember that shot, and when I see that clip and I watch it now, I guess I can't, Greg, and you might be the only one of us that can kind of put us in that position, but I cannot think of it and not tie it to them losing the series. It's just like, I cannot, you know, tying it 1-1 takes, and realizing that, and I forget that fact all the time, gives that shot a whole different meaning in the moment. And it's not just like a futile game winner. This is like LeBron is potentially is saving them from going on 2-0 at home in a series that they're favored to win. And, you know, obviously it doesn't work out, but it's just, it's thinking about it now and kind of remembering that it's in the bit, you know, and remembering sort of how this is, how it's playing out. Like, yeah, like this is, it's kind of crazy to me to think about in the sense that, you know, this was a team that at the time, like this would have, would have kept them in the series. But now I remember it as sort of like just something that wasn't quite enough.
Yeah, you were down 0-1. I mean, it looked for sure like you were going to be down 0-2. And if you went down 0-2, you were going back to Orlando for two games. It's obviously a best of seven. It was like, well, if we can't even win a home game, how are we supposed to win there? Like, I mean, everybody's like, you know, oh my God, are we going to lose in a sweep? Like, what's going to happen? And then all of a sudden, okay, it's tied and we have the momentum. You know, like it completely changed in one shot. And we all know what happened, you know, at the end. But at the time, it was like, okay, we still got this. We're still the 66-win team. We still have LeBron James. We're going to be okay. And it just gave you that confidence instead of the, you know, at the time, you know, Cleveland didn't have a title. All you knew were sports miseries. So you kind of thought, oh, this is just going to be the latest misery. And, you know, going down 0-2 and potentially getting swept, that would have been right up there, especially, you know, coming off the 66-win season. So the fact that he hit that game-winning shot, and at least temporarily, you know, you kind of had that confidence like, oh, you know, we can still do this. We can still win the series. And, you know, I still remember the TV showing both coaches, and you had Mike Brown that looks like a fan, and he's like fist pumping to the crowd and like going crazy. And there's this perfect shot of Stan Van Gundy, and all he does is like, yeah, he like gives a shrug, like, what are you going to do? Like just didn't look upset. Didn't look like, you know, pissed off. Just like, yeah, what are you going to do? And it was like the perfect kind of iconic shot of both coaches too. So, you know, obviously a great memory with that shot. And then, you know, after that, not a whole lot went right.
Oh, no. It really didn't.
Is this team the apex of the first LeBron era? Is this like the best that it ever got?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, because I mean, the next year you still win, you know, over 60 games, and you go to the playoffs, but then you lose in the second round, and you had all the whispers about, you know, LeBron leaving all year. So at least this year you were still like, okay, well, no matter what happens, we have LeBron coming back next year. He's under contract, so. I would say probably, yeah.
Greg, at this time, I don't remember this at all, frankly. Like, I, as like a 15-year-old, I just, being dumb, thought I would have LeBron on the team I was watching all the time forever. I think I definitely took that for granted. Was the idea of him leaving at all on people's minds in your recollection during this season, and as the series ends and they lose?
I would say no. I think really 2000, you know, the following season was when you really started to worry about it. But, you know, you didn't talk about it because they were winning. You know what I mean? If it was the year before where they went like 45 and 37 and, you know, were kind of a disappointment coming off a year where they went to the finals, you know, it would have been a different story. But the fact that, you know, you were winning at an all-time rate, and that was the first year you got Mo Williams, and he was like the best teammate LeBron had in those his first stint in Cleveland, and you had, you know, Zydrunas Ilgauskas was still playing at a high level, and you thought, okay, now we have our shooting guard and Delonte West, and you had, you know, a very good Daniel Gibson that looked like he was going to be, you know, at least star potential or be a very good, you know, six man as a shooter. And you were just filled with optimism at the time because you thought, well, this is only going to get better. LeBron, he's 24 years old. So I would say that whole season, you didn't have people talking about him leaving because it's like, well, why would he leave? We're the best team in the East. We won more games than anybody. You have a Boston team that's getting older. You know, that year people didn't talk about LeBron leaving because you had so much positive things to focus on.
Yeah, I'd agree. I was more of a casual basketball fan at this juncture in my life. I didn't get really more hardcore into like the nitty gritty of things. Probably actually after LeBron left and I really got to know what a bad basketball team looked like and watched it grow and become frustrated with it with, like, you know, the Kyrie years and everything. But no, I never expected LeBron to leave. I always just kind of assumed he was here for life because he was from here and he, you know, like, it's tired to say it, but a lot of people always viewed him as one of us. And like, he just kind of, you know, he's peak, he gets us kind of situation, but he kind of, like, you know, really did get Northeast Ohio, especially like with people around our age where when it was time for them to have a better opportunity, they packed up and left Northeast Ohio. And I mean, thankfully he came back, but at the time, like, it didn't seem possible, but then it kind of felt like it was definitely happening, especially after they get bounced in the second round by Boston the following season.
Yeah. That's the suboptimal part about this. This is another thing where this ends very quickly. I think one of the things looking back at these Cavs seasons is like the Cavs will hit a peak and then it goes away faster than it should. And that's, I think, an example of like, look, you get a guy as good as LeBron, you get someone as talented as him, you get a guy that is all time is important to a franchise as LeBron James is and can be and all those things. And it's like, you have to just maximize those windows. Cavs, I think, certainly did that. They tried to make a lot of trades. Like, there's a lot of crazy trades during this time, you know, and it doesn't quite work out, obviously, and they fall a little bit short. But, you know, they had a LeBron that was just utterly incredible, and I think his age 24 season is just, like, unbelievable when you go back and just look at these numbers, look at the highlights. It's just utterly insane. Any final thoughts about this season, guys?
Yeah, I got two. That Orlando series, and you know, you really didn't have any answers. I know there was a lot of, I mean, you had Rashard Lewis that was kind of hopped up on PEDs at the time that had a really good series. But really, I mean, it came down to Dwight Howard and the attention that he kind of commanded, and that really reshaped the Cavs roster again, because you had Zydrunas Ilgauskas, who had the size, but he wasn't slow, or he was too slow. He wasn't athletic enough to keep up, you know, with Dwight Howard. You had Ben Wallace, who was too old. You had Anderson Varejao, who wasn't strong enough. You had all these bigs, but none of them could guard him. So, I mean, that was the number one thing going into the off season was, okay, we need somebody that has size that can, you know, at least move a little bit, you know, because the pace in the NBA game is not nearly as fast then as it is now. So you did play a lot of half-court basketball, especially the Cavs. So, I mean, that series spearheaded the trade for Shaquille O'Neal, too.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it definitely did. And, I mean, it didn't really mean much in the end because it's weird because this year the Cavs were prepared to beat Boston and they don't even face Boston in the playoffs. So they're bounced by Orlando. The following season, they prepare their team to face Orlando and they end up getting bounced by Boston. So just kind of, you know, a little bit of bad luck as well in terms of just team planning for who your hopeful playoff opponent is just for the Cavs in these last 2 years with LeBron running the show.
Can I end on a funny note then?
Yes, sure.
Of course.
We've gone down this depressing rabbit hole of how that series ended and LeBron, you know, what he did after the end of the next year. So my LeBron story from 2009 that had nothing to do with the Cavaliers, it happened off the court. It was a tragedy for me. It's a comedy for everybody else. So I'm going to tell it. I was 21 year old working or going to school and working at the University of Akron at the time. And I had a couple different jobs. I wrote for the school newspaper. I was a member of the the radio station WZIP with Ken Carmen at the time, actually. And I had another job at the rec center. So I was working part-time at the rec center, and LeBron was hosting his basketball camps there. So this would have been the summer of 09. It was really cool, because we go over and the upper deck was open. You could go up there and you'd look down. You'd be like, oh man, you know, Shaq's down there. Chris Paul's down there. There'd be all these NBA players there. And so the one night I get off a shift at the rec center, and the rec center and James A. Rhodes Arena, where they play basketball, they're right across from each other. Just super close, a couple steps. So I get off my shift. It's late at night. It's dark. I walk over to the arena, and you know, things are wrapping up. LeBron's, you could tell he's gotten a good run in. He's got a good sweat. He's coming off the court, and I go outside and getting ready to leave. And there's these people waiting outside, you know, like college kids. They got jerseys. They know LeBron's in there. They know he's coming out. He's driving a white Bentley at the time, that says Chosen One on the license plate. So, you know, it's him. He's parked right outside the arena. There's no security. There's no nothing. Cause it's Akron. It's his hometown. And yeah, there's maybe like eight kids.
He runs the campus.
He's running everything in Akron at that point. So there's like eight kids out there. They got jerseys. They got pictures. They're waiting on his autograph. And I'm like, you know, I don't have anything for him to sign, but I kind of like to just, you know, get a picture with him or something. You know, I'm not covering the NBA. I'm a fan at this point. It's LeBron freaking James. So I'm like, okay, I'll wait. So I'm the last person in line. And this was before like selfies. All right. So you needed somebody to actually physically hold your camera phone and take a picture. So there was a girl there. She was waiting on a ride, was not waiting for LeBron. And I said, hey, LeBron's going to come out. Can you take my picture with him? She's like, yeah, that's fine. So LeBron comes out, you know, and he's pretty big when you're standing next to him, 6'8", don't have a shirt on, he's soaking with sweat. He stops and signs for every single kid. Everybody with the jersey, everybody just goes right down the line. Everybody's real cool about it, real polite. Finally gets to me. I say, hey, LeBron, can I get a picture? He's like, yeah, that's fine. So he comes over, he puts his arm around my shoulder. You know, he's dripping sweat. and if this was anybody else, this would be disgusting, right? So I give my phone to this girl, and she's getting ready to take the picture. And she is struggling. I don't know if she didn't know what button to push. She wasn't sure what was going on. But LeBron and I are just hanging out there together just for an uncomfortably long amount of time. He's got his arm around me, and I'm just thinking, oh God, just take the picture. Come on. Like, and then finally the flash goes off. She's like, oh, okay, I got it. And he's like, all right, guys, I got to go, you know, have a good night, gets in his car and leaves. And I look at the girl, and she just has this look on her face. Shut and I was up. Like, you didn't get the picture, did you? And she's like, no, sorry. She had her finger over the lens of my camera, and all you could see on this picture of me and LeBron was her fingerprint.
Oh my goodness. God. Oh my goodness, Greg. Wow.
As a 21-year-old fan of the Cavs, devastated. I thought I was never going to meet LeBron. I was going to cover the NBA. I wasn't going to go to NBA finals. You know, I was an education major. I wasn't going to do all that. That was my one chance. Devastated.
That's hard. I'm like, that I'm hurts. Processing
this,
it. I'm
yeah, this 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 really stings for me.
So, like, for my LeBron Akron story was a lot happier. See, Chris, this is why Akron's better than OU, because...
Oh, here we go.
LeBron hangs at... Well, when Keith Dambrot was the coach...
Keith Dambrot used to come to press conferences when I was covering him, when he would, like, at tournaments, or when OU would play Akron when I was in college before he went to Duquesne, and would be like, you know, when I coach LeBron, and it was just like, oh my God, we freaking know. Like, I get it. You coach LeBron.
Hey man, LeBron outfitted the men's basketball team, and his logo was plastered all over the jar. So,
I tried to steal. They did a LeBron bobblehead night when I was covering an Akron game, OU Akron game once in college, and I tried to steal one of the bobbleheads, and the people like freaked out on me.
But
that's what OU do. OU people do. They try to steal.
Yeah, they try to steal. They try to burn couches, and they try to pretend there's some big party.
They try to steal all the good things that happen to Akron people. That's what they do. I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Wow.
So that's my LeBron story. It was a tragedy for me. My friends loved it. It was a comedy for them. They loved to hear it, and they laughed at my expense. And when you said 09 and Cavs and LeBron, that's what I thought about, so I thought I'd share.
We triggered some PTSD, and I'm really sorry. I hope we were able to help you just talk through it so you can sleep easy tonight.
I've met and talked to LeBron since then, so it's okay. I've not asked him for a picture. I don't think I ever will, but I did get a chance to meet him again, so it's fine.
That's fair. Before we let you go, let me share my University of Akron LeBron story. It was during the NBA lockout. I'll keep it brief. And I had class in the jar. I think it was just some general phys ed class. For people who don't go to Akron, you were required to take two phys ed classes just to help you graduate, and you knock those out your freshman year. But so I'm walking out of the jar, and I was looking at my phone, just scrolling through it, and I bump into somebody, and I didn't process who it was. It was like this really, really tall guy. And I'm like, oh man, I'm sorry. And he's like, hey man, it's no problem. And I'm like, and I look up and I look at him, like, that guy looks kind of familiar. And I didn't put two and two together until like I'm walking out of the jar. And I'm like, oh shit, that was LeBron. And then I sprint back in. And he's like, him and just some of his teams from St. Vincent and St. Mary and like some of the Akron basketball players were just shooting around because it's a lockout. He has nothing better to do. And then I remember that. And then he was at the student union getting lunch with Keith Dambrot soon after. And every single person was taking a picture of him awkwardly trying to not be noticed while standing in line at Subway. But it's really obvious when you're like 6'8", 6'9", and everybody else is, normal size. So, yeah. No,
were
I didn't
people booing him? Because he would have been with Miami then.
I think, yes, maybe some people were maybe giving him shit, but I didn't. I wasn't one of those people. But I think it's just a lot of people were like starstruck to the fact that the University of Akron, of all places, and again, not OU, LeBron James is just spending his free time when the NBA is away. So there you go. Chris, what's your claim to fame? Did you meet like DJ Kellogg or something? Ooh. That's right. She got nothing. It's okay.
I don't have anything. I don't have anything as cool as that. I have better, a better campus atmosphere. Like it's not Cantor campus. Very good bars down in Athens. Jackie O's Brewery's down there. It's iconic.
Yeah, no bars in Akron, that's for sure.
No classic breweries like Jackie O's. The
Poppin' Frogs in Akron, buddy. So we want to try that one again.
Nothing's good as Jackie O's. The tap room in Jackie O's is just an iconic place. I have a story about a sports media personality that I will tell you guys when we are done recording, because it's one of the most absurd things that I've ever heard in my life, but I do not want to shame this person in a public way. Because there was like he came and spoke, and it was just like, oh my goodness, why is this the thing? I will say
the Social Network when Bill Gates was speaking. And the kid called Mark Zuckerberg the next Bill Gates.
It's like, who's speaking? Like, Bill Gates? No,
yeah,
it's not
like that.
No. This is like, it's more akin to the scene. It's not quite like the scene in that movie, but it's more like the scene in the movie where like Sean Parker shows up late and it's just like, we'll take the whatever. And we'll like, what are you all drinking? And she's like, what do you like? Apple teenies. And he just orders them apple teenies. And he's just being like kind of a weirdo about everything. And Eduardo's just like, glaring at him. Oh man, love the Social Network. Greg, are you in or out on the Social Network as a movie?
I've only seen it once, and it was like when it came out, but I remember liking it at the time.
Okay, good. Sorkin, Fincher, it's Eisenberg, good shit.
Reznor.
The Reznor Atticus Ross score is just like unbelievable. Yeah. Before we get out of here, guys, Greg, just because it happened today and because we teased this a little bit. Nike has a history. I just want to just get your guys' quick takes in or out on the Browns jerseys. And what would you say if Nike was going to get to redo the Cavs jerseys? What would you want? Just give me a quick answer.
Definitely in on the Browns jerseys. I think sometimes simpler is better. Wish they would have kept the orange stripes for the color rush. Wish they would have done the orange pants. Other than that, thought they were really good. My favorite Cavs jersey of all time, and you covered this in your newsletter, which I really appreciate, was the Navy alternate.
Yes. Hey, Greg. LeBron Greg, what is that newsletter called?
That would be Ineligible Man Downfield.
Thank you.
Wanted to get that right there. I had to make sure I had my wording correct. Yes, it was a very good newsletter. Everybody should subscribe. I subscribe. $100 a month, totally worth it. I would subscribe twice if I could. But your listeners get to subscribe for free, right? So I would do something that, you know, kind of brought back that Navy look, at least as an alternate. I really like that.
Yeah.
Evan, what about you?
Oh, I'm 100% in on the Browns jerseys. I think the old ones are crap. The Browns are, quote, as inept as they are, at least in our lifetime, they are a legacy franchise, and you don't really mess with the look of a legacy franchise. So going back to that look is nice. I do hope that maybe they introduce brown pants, or not brown pants, orange pants, maybe an orange jersey at some point. But I'm a little concerned about the mono turd look with the all brown everything with no stripes whatsoever. So that'll be a little weird. But other than that, I'm all in on them. Excited to see how they look. Hopefully they don't suck this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're great. I don't know how I feel about the all brown, but we'll see how it looks in person more than it does kind of in that video. If the Cavs are going to redo it, I just want the I'm on the record about this. I want the Cavs netting like logo, and then I want it in orange. Yeah. I want it in the orange and blue. I want the wine and gold. I want like all versions of that, and then I want the '90s jersey as the fourth jersey.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Sounds good to me.
Just not what they, as, no, what they have
as
now.
As long as they drop that stupid black jersey, I'm fine.
And the black is going to stay, unfortunately, because they won a title in it, and that's unfortunate because they won the jersey in the worst jersey possible.
The tire treads. It's just get rid of those, and I think you.
Yeah, and trying to make it like a soccer logo, it doesn't quite work with basketball. And I say it as like a soccer person. All right, that's going to be it for today's show. Greg, as always, thanks so much for coming on. We always appreciate your time, man, and we'll have you on again very soon. You're going to be, I guess, we'll have to figure out when we're going to do this, but you're going to be hosting a trivia game between Evan and I soon, so that's going
to
be fun.
Yes. Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
So from Evan and I, this has been Locked On Cavs. Follow us on social everywhere at Locked On Cavs, and we'll talk to you again after the weekend. Enjoy, and we'll talk to you on Monday. And again, check out get ready for the book club. First episode on the prologue and the first two chapters of Return of the King by Windhorst and McMenamin is next Friday. Get reading now. It's a fun book. Please read, and we'll talk about that next week. Have a great weekend.